The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Pedalon Ron. You are listening to Bicycle Talk. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. I'm recording on Tuesday right now, and Franny's off at work. So anyway, no Franny today, but that's okay. If you want to leave comments down below, you certainly can, and I'll try to answer them or get back to them later on. So whatever, we would appreciate that. Bicycle Talk's a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, please feel free to reach out to me either on the Facebook Live page or the Bicycle Talk page, or you can reach me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Also, you can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. Here it is. I got a piece that I will be addressing shortly in the show, which is basically Walk This Way. Feds finally want car safety standards to apply to people outside of the vehicle. Well, no kidding. Yeah, in the midst of two-decade rise, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has proposed new rules to reduce fatalities among pedestrians and cyclists. Yes, vulnerable users, we like to call them. Anyway, we will get to that, and we'll talk about a little bit more about that later on in the show. Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross, on a positive side. Yes, Sunday was the Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross race, part of the Project Mayhem Cross Series, opening number one of the seven race series that we have going on. Big shout out to Jed Kornbluh for giving me his date. Long story, not a big deal. We're good now. This won't happen next year, and we'll have eight races. Or at least that's what we think. Anyway, it was the kickoff race. It's why I was so tired that I couldn't do my show yesterday, so I'm doing it today, my live show. But this will be recorded, and it will happen, of course, on Wednesday, September 11th, 2024, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Okay, so big shout out to the race, which we have termed as part of Project Mayhem Cyclocross, and it was Damned at the Dam. That's the shirt I'm wearing right now. I also had these hoodies made, which everybody who wins a race gets a hoodie. That's kind of cool. So anyway, that's just tradition. So great day, great weather, the best volunteers. Big shout out to the Thread City Cyclers. Lots of folks came and helped out two days ago. Sorry, I'm way off track here. The best course designers, the best sponsors, Dragon's Blood Elixir, Willimantic Brewing Company, Click Kitchen, Store Center, Cycling, The Healing Earth, Natural Medicine, our very own Fran Storch, of course. And of course, the other things on a positive side, this week is Wednesday, week three of the CCAP Cyclocross Training Series in Rocky Hill, Connecticut. If you're interested in cyclocross, you live in our area, and you want to find out more about it, it's a training race. That's what it is, a training race. It's nothing like crazy. You don't have to be super competitive, but if you want to learn about a little bit more about cross, then this is the way you can do it. So it's kind of cool. Other positive sides. The Vuelta was crazy this year. Crazy. Did you notice it? Yeah, it was nuts. What a race. This and more in the show. Mechanical Minute and, I missed it here. Well, Mechanical Minute and Ron's Tip of the Week, ghost bikes. Roadside memorials that can make human costs of our traffic violent crisis visible. I'm going to talk a little bit about ghost bikes today, because ghost bikes are something that you can do. If you know someone who unfortunately lost their life while riding their bicycle down the road and they were hit by a motorized vehicle and that's what happened, these little memorials that we put up, they are there to indicate that someone someone's life was tragically lost here. And there's a way of doing it, and I'm going to discuss that shortly. And then there's another piece here on my Mechanical Minute and Tip of the Week, and it is, where can a body safely park a bike? There's a group that wants to map, rate, and review bike parking everywhere. And of course, this is with your help, and that comes from California Streets Blog. We'll get to that in a little bit. Right now, I want to go to the ghost bike. Okay, so this basically is, I don't know if you've ever seen these or not. Maybe you have. Obviously, if you're a cyclist, you probably, and you're listening to the show, which is common, you probably already know what a ghost bike is. But anyway, it's a roadside memorial to a victim of traffic violence. I like the fact that they call it traffic violence. That's like a very good description. And unfortunately, it is becoming a more common scene across America. Even more unfortunately, though, those altars are often removed by people who don't understand their importance to the people who are left grieving, and to advocates who refuse to allow the deadly impacts of car culture to be erased from our public realm. So anyway, there's a Bostonian filmmaker by the name of Matt Augenbein, and he made a quest to restore two of his city's lost ghost bikes to help preserve the memory of two cyclists who were taken too soon. And he also included a handy how-to for anyone else who wants to call attention to the deadly roads where their neighbors were killed and slain riders whose stories deserve to be told. So there is a film out, okay, and it's called Ghost Bikes, and I believe you can find this. Yes, you can watch it on YouTube, and it's definitely worth seeing, I would say. It definitely is a worth see. So I would, I'm going to just post it over here to my notes, and then it will get saved, and I will post it on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page for anyone who wishes to check it out. And I will also post it on the Bicycle Talk YouTube channel, so you guys can kind of check it out too. Definitely worth looking at, worth seeing. It basically what you do is you find yourself an old bike. And when you find the old bike, you are going to spray paint it white. And white everywhere, tires, rims, you name it, everything gets painted white. That's why we're looking for an old bike. We're not really looking for anything you're going to probably be riding or anyone would like to steal and ride. This is going to be primarily as a shrine or a message, a sign to let other people know that you got to be careful here. Someone was hit here by a car and they didn't make it through. Or, you know, maybe the cars will get the idea that, ooh, wait, somebody was hit here. I should slow down. Whether that will work or not, I do not know. But you know what? You never know, and it could. And this is certainly something that you can put together yourself. And it requires a can of spray paint. And yes, if you go to your local hardware store now, you may get carded. Because too many people are buying spray paint and tagging with it. And so therefore, the local establishments that sell paint have to check and see if you're legitimate, that you're not buying it for a young person who's going to be out tagging. Crazy world we live in, isn't it? But anyway, that's what it is. So the idea is to try to find one of those places where you know that someone has been critically injured, and that's where you want to put your ghost bike up. Might be a family member, might be a friend, might be someone you know in the neighborhood, might be whatever, anywhere you can find. So this is like a really, really super good thing to do, to try to bring more recognition for us here in the bicycle advocacy world to letting people know what exactly is going on out there with cars, trucks, and bicycles, which it's a tough mix. And I talk about it a lot on this show. I know, I hope I don't talk about it too much on this show, but I think it's a really, really important thing that we must address. So anyway, that's where I will leave you a link on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, and you can go there and you can check that out and see the video. It's powerful. It's a little disturbing, but you know, this is the world we live in. So let's check that out. And let's see, what else do I have here? So this is another piece. Where can a body safely park a bike? And I know this is kind of weird, but it's in Mechanical Tips and Cycling and Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips, because it is a cycling tip. So we're going to go there too. So this is about a group that wants to map, rate, and review bike parking everywhere. And of course, they're going to need your help in order to do this. So safe, secure, convenient bike parking is an underappreciated yet key factor in encouraging people to ride your bike. Bike Rack Map, a new website created by advocates, wants to rate, map, and review bike parking everywhere. And of course, they are looking for your help on this. So it gives you an idea. You go here and you go to the website. You can join for free there. All right. You can map, rate, and review there. You can add locations. You can put how-to videos there. There's all sorts of fun stuff. But basically, it's really trying to, you know, help you add in to the National Mapping Service is what we're really looking for here. And, you know, show people where they can lock their bike, where they know when they come back it's still there. Yeah, that's another problem. But anyway, you definitely want to do that. Make sure you rate your rack location based on how well a bike with baskets can access and fit into the rack. Okay, the rack below in this picture is an excellent example of bike parking for bikes, and they show you exactly how it works, especially with a lot of the e-bikes that are out there. They tend to be a little bit bulkier, but you want to make sure that bike rack has a lot of space around it so you can put more than one bicycle in that racked position. So if you see a bad rack, you want to rate that also. There's the old, and I hate these racks. I don't understand why we went in this direction, but those big hoopy racks that are, you know, they come up, they go around with a big upside down U, and then a right side up U, and then an upside down U. They're worthless. They don't hold any bicycles whatsoever. You know, maybe you get two or three bicycles into there at the most. They tend to make it so that your bike is being, the paint on your bike is getting scraped because you have to lean it against it. It's just, I don't understand who thought this was a good idea. Maybe I should bring that up in my rant next week. Anyway, I like to have a different level of security for my bike, but what can I do? I mean, when I go to the community center here in town, we've got this style of rack, and it just kind of became a nationally accepted way of you know, building bicycle racks that can be bolted down solidly to the concrete that will make it so people won't steal bikes. But they're very difficult to understand if you're not really aware of how they work. And I see people, they'll take their bike and they'll lay it against the side of this thing and take up three or four slots. And it's worthless. It doesn't do anyone any good when you do that, because the wheel is actually supposed to go underneath or through one of those hoops, and then you're supposed to lock it that way. But they just don't work very good. But anyway, That's this one, which I am looking at here on this webpage, was rated as a bad wreck. So anyway, you can add your locations. You can manage locations here. There's a frequently asked question page. So if you're a little concerned about how do I do this, you can do that. And hopefully you'll be able to help us put together a national safe place to rack my bike program here. So it's a bike rack map. Its website is bikerackmap.com. You can go there and you can check it out and see what you think. And of course, there's a little donation page if you want to, you know, help them out in some way financially. That's a really good thing. So anyway, this helps you map locations for bike parking and rate its quality. Is it obstructed? Is it easy to access? Is it wimpy? Is it secured? Is it hidden away so no one can keep an eye on it? Is there enough room for a bike with baskets or fat tires or fenders? Can pedestrians get around it? So too many times an establishment provides a rack that is difficult to lock to, or installed too close to a wall, or inadvertently attached to the ground. Always test a rack before you lock your precious bike to it in case the bolts are loose or easily removed. It's a rating system whereby users can give a rack between 1 and 5 stars. 5 stars, of course, are for the most wonderful, safe and secure and easy to use protected bike parking. The goal of the project is to create a global map of bike racks with photos, ratings and comments so that bike riders know what is available or not in a location and to gather data that can be used to advocate for better bike parking. A local analysis can show where bike parking exists and where it is needed. Here, right here in Stores, Connecticut, if you go over to what they now call Downtown Stores, where they built all these big buildings with commercial underneath and apartments above, there is an interesting system where they put like a railing that goes all the way around the common center where the little green is and the stage is for performances. And it's super simple. You can just lock onto the railing. Now that seems to me to make a whole lot more sense than some of these hoop things. I don't like the hoop things, but you know, the hoop things are everywhere and that's the common thing. And they're there also, but they have this other system, which is quite nice too. So the real problem that I see with racking is there are absolutely no instructions whatsoever as to how to rack your bike into one of these racks. And maybe that would be another thing. I'm going to write these guys a little note and say, and ask them if they could put some sort of a video out, which would explain to it, if we could put a QR code on all of the bike racks, linking people over to that video, be a big help. Everybody's got a phone on them. I mean, not everybody has a phone on them, but a lot of people have phones on them now. And they could just scan it and go, oh, that's how you lock to this. Brilliant, eh? Maybe I'll make one. Maybe I'll make one, submit it to them. That's another idea. I've got a phone. I can figure this out. But anyway, it's just getting off the ground. This is brand new, and most of the data has been added. It's a California base, so we're gonna, you know, have to wait a little while until we get to see a better development. And so here's on this site, on this article, it says wave racks are just not good. They're designed to roll the front wheel into the rack, which means there is no contact between the bike frame and the rack for the lock. Bikes with baskets must lean against the end of the rack in an awkward, unstable position. It's difficult to lock. This can block pedestrians. And the other option, to lock your bike horizontally, would take up the entire rack, leaving no space for the other bikes. Didn't I just say that? I think I did. So anyway, the old school rack below has many problems. And the old school rack, you remember these, they had multiple places to put your bike in, and they're big and heavy and steel, and you just roll your front wheel in, and worked pretty good until someone decided to get all tweaky on your bike. In other words, they were just being vandals, and they would just, you know, push the bike and bend the wheel, and now you have no front wheel or no rear wheel because some deviant decided to do something to it. So those are not really that great. And there was a first comprehensive Northwest Las Vegas bike parking census and analysis. They found both parking deserts, oceans of vehicles parking surrounded by a couple of bike racks and what they called mirages. And in those pockets, you would see some of these racks, which are kind of, you know, dated, let's say. So what's a good rack? That's a good question. And again, I think anything, you know, I used to tell people this all the time, because I had a bicycle shop and I had lots of student activity around campus and in town. And if you brought your bike down to town where my bike shop was and you didn't lock it up, you didn't see it again. That was it. We had a high theft rate in Willimantic. And it's because we lived in that Willimantic tends to be, not to point any fingers or make any judgments, but it's a poor community. And because it's a poor community, people tend to, if they see a bike that's, you know, not attached to anything, they're going to make it theirs. So we have a program now in town with the Willimantic Area Interfaith Ministries that is taking donated bikes. So if you have an old bike, you can donate it to them. And then there are local people that are good with a wrench that are fixing them up, and we're giving them to people who are in need of bikes, which is great. That's a great way to do it. They don't have to buy a bike. They can get one that's been refurbished, that works really well, and we'll transport them around town. And when I talked to Kristen a couple weeks ago, she said they've distributed over 80 of these to the community. That's pretty cool. So, and that is another thing that can happen in your community too. You can build on programs like this. It can be based around whatever. You know, ours is based around the Willimantic Area Interfaith Ministries, which is a collection of churches that do really good things for our area. But you can base it around other things too. You could base it through the Chamber of Commerce. You could, you know, whatever you choose as a good avenue. Even a local bike shop that has a program would be another avenue of which you could maybe distribute bikes through. I used to distribute bikes the same way back when I had my bike shop, and all I did was I called my local friendly police officer down at the police station and said, I got 6 bikes. You got homes for them? And they were there in seconds. I think they put the lights and the siren on to get there because it was so important to them, because they knew exactly who needed a bike. And they knew the other thing that I got out of that was the officer that I dealt with said that sometimes giving a certain, like a kid, a bike so he could transport himself around town, what's the difference between him going to jail in the future and being a good, upstanding citizen? So, you know, we gotta pay attention to that sort of thing. And a bicycle offers freedom. It offers transportation. It offers the ability to build your self-esteem. It offers the ability to stay fit. There's just so many good things about a bicycle. And donating a bicycle to a cause that knows where they need to go and who they need to go to is extremely important. And if you don't have that cause in your area, start it right now. Okay? You hear me talk about this a lot in this show. You know, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So if it is not addressed in your area, then address it. If you don't have the time to address it, find someone who will. But these are great programs. So anyway, where can a body park a bike? There's a site for it now. There's a website for it. Very, very cool. Okay, what else have I got here? So the other thing I talked about was walk this way. Feds finally want car safety standards to add people outside of the vehicle. Well, duh. That's what we say here in Bicycle Talk Land. It's about time. D-U-H. That's a capital D, a capital U, a capital H. Duh. Who wouldn't, you know, why not? Imagine that. Federal government's finally moved to make cars safer for people outside the cars. Yay, federal government. Let's hear it for that. That's a good thing. You know, everybody may have their opinions here, but this is a good one. In the midst of a 15-year rise in pedestrian deaths that more or less mirrors a sharp rise in American vehicle size, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration proposed new rules on Monday to reduce the fatalities and serious injuries among pedestrians struck by vehicles by establishing new motor vehicle safety standards. This will apply to bicycles also, requiring the new passenger vehicles to be designed to reduce risk of serious to fatal injuries in child and adult pedestrian crashes. And I like this because all these car manufacturers have decided that the infamous pickup truck, which is the worst vehicle on the road right now as far as pedestrian and bicycle safety goes, they're all now being made so fancy now that they're passenger vehicles. And because they're passenger vehicles, they are going to have to apply to this. So the rule itself would apply to vehicles under 10,000 pounds, which includes almost all SUVs and light trucks, which is a large segment of the U.S. market. We have a crisis of roadway deaths, and it's even worse among vulnerable users like pedestrians. Sophia Shulman, the National Highway and Traffic Safety Administration's Deputy Administrator said in a statement, the auto industry would be subject to new testing procedures simulating head-to-hood impact and performance requirements, and the resulting vehicle design would have to reduce the risk of serious fatal head injury to a child or adult pedestrian impact at speeds up to 25 miles per hour, which encompasses about 70% of the pedestrian injuries from vehicle impacts. Why don't we just lower the speed limit to 20 miles an hour? There's a no-brainer, but, you know, whatever. This, like I've always said, if I were king, okay, in Ron's world, wherever there is a pedestrian crosswalk, anywhere, on any street, I don't care where it is, the speed limit is 20 miles per hour. People live through 20 mile per hour impacts. People die over 20 mile per hour impacts. So there's your solution. There's a big solution. Okay, I'll stop. I'll get off that soapbox. I have other things I need to talk about today anyway. But study after study after study has revealed that high hoods of today's SUVs and pickup trucks, which are far bigger and heavier than earlier models, are a major factor in pedestrian and cycling deaths. Manufacturers can make less dangerous vehicles to pedestrians by lowering the front end of the hood and angling the grill and hood to create a slope profile, said a report from the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety earlier this year. There's no functional benefit to these massive blocky fronts. Yeah, there is. It looks cool. That's what it is. It's all about emotion. That's what it is. It's all about passion and having to drive your Mad Max vehicle all over the streets and make some sort of statement with that. I have no idea why. I have no idea at all. But anyway, I guess maybe I did when I was, you know, 15 years old. But I like to say that I've evolved from that. Anyway, whatever. So some American vehicles, especially those sold in Europe, do meet the proposed standards, but the new rules would address many U.S. variants and other models built under uniquely American platforms that may or may not meet the standards. This includes essentially the entire pickup truck and large SUV segments, about 22% of the U.S. passenger vehicle 2020 sales, according to the data provided by Ward's Automotive. Okay, that's it. I'm going to leave it alone. I mean, I could go deeper into this, but I think we've we've discussed this enough to move on to our next subject. And what is our next subject? Bicycle racing, of course. Anybody paying attention to any of this? Oh my God, it's unbelievable. The Vuelta was incredible this year. Again, the Vuelta is always incredible. They have the nastiest of the climbs. They have the hottest of the weather. The Vuelta is unique in Grand Tours because of the time of year that it's placed, and also because I don't know what it is with the folks that put the Vuelta together, but they find the worst and most unusual climbs that they possibly can. Some of them going up to as high as 24%, which we did see this year. And the filming of it, because I, of course, watched a lot of this, big shout out to NBC Peacock for broadcasting bicycle racing. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. I've been waiting for this for years. It's great. So there were times when you could barely see the riders because they were riding in the clouds. It was kind of cool. But anyway, so Vuelta recap, week three. All right, game over. This is it. Of course, we had a leader who had made an amazing breakaway early in and put a lot of time on everyone, and no one was expecting it. And he's not a slouch of a rider either. And so now the game began. And this is it. This is the way the bicycle racing game is played. So there was an Australian rider, and he was in the lead for, I think, 12 days. I think he held that lead, long time. And of course, Primoz Roglic was the big, you know, expected winner of the race because he was in the best fitness. He had a great team behind him. He had a new team behind him, and he was looking for another victory there. And so that's where we were at. So there was that rest day was on, it was two Mondays ago now. And then stage 16 came in with a 181.3 kilometer mountain stage. Stage 17 was a very, very flat stage, so a sprinter stage. Stage 18 was what was deemed as a hilly stage at 179.3 kilometers. And then came stage 19, not the queen stage. Hard to believe, because it's where it all happened. It was the hot stage. Stage 19 was Logrando Alto del Monclavio, 173.2 kilometer mountain stage. And what happens? Roglic on a solo. He was with his team members, and they launched him on a breakaway. Towed him down the road until they couldn't, and then let him go. And off he went, and he ended up with a lead at the end of stage 19. Now, he had been behind up to this point. He had been behind all, you know, by not many seconds. I mean, it really had come down to, you know, 5 or 10 seconds or something. It was really, really, really close. And he did this lead out breakaway, and he ended up with a lead of 1:54. 2 days before the end of the tour. It's like playing chess, folks. If you don't understand bicycle racing, after you start learning more about it, you get to see the strategies involved. And I'll tell you, the Bora team was smart this year. They played it out like a perfectly executed attack, and that's what they did. And off he went. Now he's got 1:54. There's two more stages coming up, including the queen stage, which was stage 20, 172 kilometer mountain stage. All Primoz had to do is hold his own and have his team do that, which is exactly what happened. And then stage 21 was a 24.6 kilometer time trial. Really hard to lose 1:54 in a 24.6 kilometer time trial. And he roared into the red with his 14th Vuelta stage win, and he also picked up the 40th red jersey of his career in style on the Alto del Maccabio. So pretty cool stuff. Yeah. It was a great race. It was great to watch. It was really that fun. Unfortunately, I had to do some catch up on it, which I did yesterday, so I would be able to kind of talk about this a little bit more, because I spent a good portion of the day on the couch yesterday because I was cooked from putting on an event. So if you've never put on a big event, a big cycling event, but you've always participated in one, please volunteer next time when someone asks you to volunteer so you get to see exactly how much work is involved. There's a ton of work involved. And, you know, we started working on this. I submitted paperwork back in March of this year, and the event was 2 days ago. So just to give you an idea, so we're into September now, and that's I was actually planning on this race being in October. So it takes a lot of organization, a lot of coordination, phone calls, emails, text back and forth, permits to get filled out, approvals to happen, fees to pay to get the whole thing to come together. And then there's the physical effort of the race itself. Fortunately, this was our 41st year at Mansfield Hollow. We didn't run races all 41 years, but that's when it started 41 years ago. But I've got equipment now because of years and years of buying stakes and using them, you know, over and over again, replacing the ones that got broken and also adding into them. For a long time, the Thread City Cyclers were involved with this. And every year I would, I'll call it quote unquote, rent the stakes from them, but I would basically buy them more stakes and each year. And so we've built up quite an inventory now, and you need that when you're putting together something like this. If you want to see what this is all about, go to my Bicycle Talk Facebook page, and there's a really cool video that someone in my 50 plus or 60 plus category, 60 plus category maybe, he had a camera on the front and on the back. He had GoPros on both sides of his bike. And so you got to see it from the front and also from the back. It's very cool. Very, very, very cool. So you want to check that out because that's cool. And hopefully that is uploaded by now, but it did take a little while to get Facebook to allow it to load up. Hopefully it's done by now, but I haven't checked recently because I'm doing a show right now. So anyway, check it out. It's what cyclocross is all about. It's what Mansfield Hollow cyclocross is all about. You get a little picture here of exactly what happens. So pretty cool stuff. Anyway, going back, Wout van Aert. Okay. He had just an amazing crash. Two crashes in one stage. Two. Just horrible. You know, it can happen. It's never wonderful when it does happen. And it was, you know, it was very, very unfortunate for him. And where did my... Okay, here it is. Where is it? So he had a serious knee injury without a fracture, and he forced the Belgian cyclist to pull out of the Spanish race and stop competing until, and this is a typo here, 2024, it says, no, until 2025. He's done for the year. Brings an end to a very difficult year for Van Aert. He has suffered at least 10 crashes. You want to race a bike? Guess what? You're going to fall off a lot. Including one in March that left him with a broken collarbone and sternum. Wout van Aert will miss the World Championships in Zurich on the 29th of October, where he was one of the favorites. He was also due to compete in the European Championships in his home country of Belgium next week on September 15th, but will not be able to start there either. It's been decided that he will not compete in 2024 in order to fully recover from his injuries after undergoing the necessary medical tests and discussing his condition with doctors. Van Aert suffered a serious crash on the descent of La Calada del León in stage 16 of the Vuelta a España, and the Belgian crashed into rocks at around 50 kilometers per hour and was forced to abandon the stage. He suffered a serious blow to his right knee. His team, Lisa Bike, said on Thursday that the Belgian had to stop. He needs time to recover. This is undoubtedly a major setback for the rider, who was in excellent form after winning three stages of the Vuelta and leading both in the point and the mountain classification. He was having a heck of a race. There's no question about that. But that crash was ugly. And, of course, if you go look online, you can probably see that crash because it's fairly well publicized out there. YouTube has got it. There's a few other outlets there. So his season has been very impressive. Prior to the Vuelta España, he won a bronze medal in the Olympic time trial at the end of July, finishing behind Filippo Ganna and champion Remco Evenepoel and beating other specialists in that discipline. He also played a crucial role in helping his teammate Evenepoel to victory in the road race, assisting the Belgian star at a crucial moment. This year, Van Aert had a fair share of bad luck and has been involved in at least 10 crashes. The worst came late March during a one-day Douar de Vlaanderen, where he broke his collarbone, sternum, and several ribs. Boy, a lot of guys went down in that crash. In addition to a bruised lung, the crash prevented him from competing in two major spring targets, the Tour of Flanders and Paris-Roubaix, races that he's always prepared for but has yet to add to his list. So the Visa Lease Bike team, which was the most dominant team in 2023, winning all three Grand Tours, the Giro with Primo Roglic, the Tour de France with Jonas Vingegaard, and the Vuelta with Sepp Kuss, has suffered a number of setbacks this season. In addition to Van Aert's crashes, their top rider, Vingegaard, suffered a serious crash in the Tour of Basque Country in April. And he ended up with a punctured lung and broken ribs and didn't get back on his bike to race his bike until the Tour de France. That was just tragic. So his fitness was not at the same level as Tadej Pogačar's was at that time, I don't think. Anyway, didn't appear to be. He said he felt fine. He said he was going to be fine. And he did show an outstanding performance, but not the performance that was needed to win the Tour de France this year. No worries. There's rumors out there, which I will get to shortly. So now that Van Aert's out of the picture for the Worlds, it looks like Vanderpool, Evenepoel, or Pogačar will once again be among the contenders at the end of the season battle for the rainbow jersey. Yeah, we'll just have to see. So anyway, that's Wout Van Aert. Interesting Wout Van Aert information. Now, that pretty much kind of pulls him out of the whole cyclocross scene, too. But, well, we'll see what happens. We'll see what he decides to do. I can't imagine racing cross with the amount of damage he's done to his body right now. But, you know, I'm sure they'll let us know. But, you know, the cross season does begin now. It does go into 2025. And maybe he would use it as a comeback. Who knows? But anyway, that's what it is. He is out now, and that is what we're dealing with. So anyway, 3 days ago, there was a post that said, if, when Roglic goes on to win this Vuelta, this may be seen as a masterclass from Red Bull Bora. They probably did not want to give O'Connor so much time early in the race, but ever since that point, Bora Roglic has done everything right. They have been patient, they realized they did not need to win every stage, and they took time when the opportunities came up. Very impressive by the entire Bora team. I concur. It was just amazing. Additionally, the fact that it was just announced that Bora is bringing Dan Bingham on board signals to this writer that there have been they have the resources to try and establish themselves as a dominant GC team going forward. Be interesting to watch this play out in the next few seasons. So yeah, let's keep our eyes on this team because there's stuff going on. So the finishing of the Vuelta a España, and like I said, that stage 19 was just, that was worth every bit of, I'm going to go search this thing out on YouTube and watch and see what happens. That was a spectacular stage. To be able to put that much time on second place was really impressive. And here's how it all laid out in the end. And it is Primož Roglič from Red Bull Bora. Hasgro was 81 hours, 49 minutes, and 18 seconds. Yeah, when was the last time you rode your bike 89 hours, 49 minutes, and 18 seconds? Ben O'Connor from Australia, who held it for so long until the very last few stages, he was down 2:36 at the end. Enrique Mas. Boy, I like watching Enrique Mas race a bike. That guy is just really fun and talented. I talked about him on the show a few weeks back about the most amazing piece of bike handling I've seen in a long time. Other than Tadej Pogačar missing the road furniture in that other race. That was kind of a spooky, weird thing. But Enrique Mas did a nose wheelie on a major descent and somehow brought the rear end of the bike down. By the way, kids, if you're learning, if you want to learn how to do that, clamp the rear brake. That's how it's done. And he bounced that rear wheel down and skidded to a stop, was able to regain himself from a very, very tragic looking crash up in the mountains. Anyway, he finished at 3:13, so he was yet another little less than a minute behind second place Ben O'Connor. And big shout out to Ben O'Connor for you know how long he held his lead there. That was really pretty impressive. He had a ride that was certainly good enough for his agent to find him a better team to ride for. Anyway, Richard Carapaz, another great ride. Another good ride. Boy, they just really made this race interesting. He was fourth overall. He was down 4:02 from Primož Roglič. And Mattias Skjelmo, from Denmark was 5 minutes and 49 seconds down. That's the Vuelta a España. It was great to watch. It was just a really, really great race. If you like bike racing, that's a good one. That's a good one. You might want to go back and look for some highlights. You can get YouTube highlights out there, which will not run anything as far as cost goes. And you can get the daily highlights and you can check it out and see how it progressed. It was certainly a very, very interesting race and certainly cool to watch. So, this brings me to the rumor mill. Let's go to the rumor mill. Yeah, the rumor mill. Tadej Pogačar is back. Yeah, Tadej. Remember Tadej? Yeah, he won the Giro. He won the Tour de France. And he won them both handily. But then he said, I'm tired. I can't do this anymore. Did not do the Olympics, which he was planning on doing. And he's back. The Giro Italian Tour de France champion is heading to Canada, where he will lead the UAE team Emirates as the Slovenian steps up his preparation for the upcoming World Championships. I've had a good break from racing and I'm eager to get back to it now, starting in Canada, the 25-year-old says in conversation with a UAE Emirates official website as his leadership for the 2024 GP Quebec and GP Montreal. Those are on September 13th and September 15th, and they are confirmed. He says, it's a beautiful part of the world to ride a bike, and I have great memories here from 2 years ago. So here we go. And will he be in race shape? That's really good. He says the level there will be high there as always, and we need to be at our best. And he says, whatever happens for the rest of the season, I can be happy with what I've achieved this year. Anything else will be a bonus. My condition is good, and I'm focused on enjoying and doing well this last part of the season. So we shall see what happens in Canada, and then we shall see what happens in Zurich, Switzerland, which is basically that's where the worlds are this year. So we'll see what it looks like. I've got a website here. We'll preview this before it happens so we can see what's going on as far as that goes. You know, it should be a great race. Now, on the rumor mill, here we go. I don't know where it comes from. It's very surprising. Visma denies claims that Jonas Vingegaard has asked to take on the Giro d'Italia and the Tour de France doubleheader for 2025. Ho-ho! How about that? Who is he going to... But Tadej Pogačar is still there, man. He's not going to be there. So anyway, this is a rumor. It is not a fact. I am not trying to influence this in any way. But there is a rumor. And Lisa Bike says, nope, not doing that. But... you know, I really don't know where it comes from. It certainly does not come from our team, is what Visma says. We haven't even started the evaluation of this season. I don't know where it comes from. It is just very surprising. So will he be going for the doubleheader? Will he not be going for the doubleheader? Write to me. Let me know. See what you think. Do you think that Jonas Vingegaard in really, really, really good health and fitness is good enough to beat Tadej Pogačar? We got two of the, like, some of the most entertaining bicycle. And then there's, you know, Evenepoel. We got some great, great entertaining riders in professional bicycling and professional cycling right now. It's just been a whole lot of fun to watch if you're into the whole bike racing thing, which obviously I am. So anyway, it'll be another great season of bike racing. I can't wait. I just can't wait. It's always good. And we haven't even gotten through the worlds or cross season yet. So hey, here we go. We'll see what happens. He's, you know, I can't predict. He could be good enough to be that guy. He very well could be that good to be that guy. But we'll just have to see. I'm gonna pull this thing in, and first of all, we're gonna look at, let me just look at this because I put this down. Tadej Pogačar is going to do, of course, those two races in Canada on the 29th of September. There is the World Championships, and in October 5th, there's the Giro dell'Emilia. There's the on the 10th. Okay, that was 10-8, which will be the Europeans do their dates backwards. I get confused. So on October 8th, there's the Tre Valli Varsine. And on December, there is the Lombardia. And then the World's Rainbow Jersey, of course. You know, that's, we'll see what happens there with the World Championships. So, you know, what's the rumor? Who knows? We don't know. Where are we going to move on? We have to go to our events page. Remember that World Championship race is September 29th, 2024. I will keep you updated as to what I know when I know it. The CCAP Rocky Hill Cyclocross Training Series is Wednesday night, and it will be on Wednesday. The next one is the 18th, which is this Wednesday coming up, and there's a final one on the 25th for all you cyclocross fans. Project Mayhem Cyclocross. Stay tuned. Nah, don't stay tuned. We already had the first one. Yeah. Mansfield Hollow was the first. It was the season opener. And we are going to have more coming up very soon. And I'm going to go down that list here as soon as I can find it. September 14th, there will be Pain in the Neck, Haddam Neck, Connecticut. September 22nd, Hidden Valley Cross in New Haven, Connecticut. October 6th, Newtown Cross in Newtown, Connecticut. October 20th, Belltown Throwdown in Portland, Connecticut. November 17th, Morin Cross in Wallingford, Connecticut. And December 1st, Orchard Scorcher in Guilford, Connecticut. So that is the rest of the Project Mayhem. And I have something else in here that I wanted to mention, and that is this weekend coming up on Sunday, September 15th, is the Tour Apakum. And that is on Bike Ridge. It's at or at www.tourapakum.org. That's O-P-A-C-U-M. And you can check that out too if you're looking for a nice ride to go on. Lime Rock Epic Sunday, October 8th in Lakeville, Connecticut. Okay, so this is based on basically it's in Litchfield County. It's a gravel ride, Gravel Fondo, 68-mile ride, a 53-mile ride, and an 18-mile ride. So we got a few things coming up there too, and that should keep everyone busy. Finishing points. How about that? Vuelta España. Bora team showing its power, patience, and desire to win another Grand Tour for Primoz Roglic. I have to say, the thing that I'm going to really focus on here on this comment is patience. Bicycle racing is an interesting sport, and there is a lot of strategy to it. A lot of people go, well, you're just riding a bike. I just ride my bike. It's no big deal. No, there's a lot of teamwork involved. And the Bora team did an outstanding job. I would say as good a job as Visma did last year in educating us as to why you ride together as a team. So pretty cool stuff. So 2024, we're getting close to the end. Not really at the end yet, but what's your plan? More miles, ride and commute to work or around town, better fitness, or simply enjoying the bicycle rides you take more by slowing down and smelling the roses? My style. I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. You need to get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and lack of places to safely ride. And, you know, get out and ride your bike. Also, one day a week, park your car or truck, right? This is the Pedal and Run Challenge. And just use your bike. Ride your bicycle instead. You just might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, who was an awesome podium girl at the race on Sunday. Franny gets into the whole scene. She's totally into it. So anyway, if you'd like to leave a message, you can leave it right down here below on my Facebook page, or you can just leave a message on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. You can also listen to past, or you can send me an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or now on my YouTube channel. If you like to contribute information to the show, drop me an email. This is Pedal and Run. Keep the rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you all so much for listening. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!